Hello, everyone. This is Greg, your host of Goddamn GameCube, and this is Season 4. Follow Goddamn GameCube on social for updates on the show, and subscribe to us on YouTube for bonus video content. Thank you, and enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Goddamn GameCube. Greg and Riley are your hosts today, and today we are going to be talking about Death Stranding. And before I kick it to Riley, I want to recall something I tweeted out a couple of months ago. I said something to the extent of, I really want video games to get weird again. Like, show me something new. Show me something really out there. And I think with Death Stranding, I got what I asked for.
Yeah. What prompted that? Do you remember?
I think I had replayed Silent Hill 2 or something like that. Yeah. And I was like, man, there's some really weird stuff in this game, and I really appreciate it. So I think this is going to be one of the more difficult games that we've reviewed. There's a lot going on. So Riley, why don't you take it away? This is going to be an interesting one. Let's do it.
Yes. So this is, as most know, a new Hideo Kojima game. His first project since Metal Gear Solid 5. His departure from Konami. It is a third person action survival or Strand type game developed by Kojima Productions and published by Sony Interactive Entertainment, 505 Games on the PC. This was released in 2019 for the PS4, 2020 for PC. Director's Cut with a little additional content was released in 2021. Players assume the role of Sam Porter Bridges, portrayed by Norman Reedus, a delivery man who becomes the last hope of an organization that hopes to reconnect and rebuild a post-apocalyptic United States. So right off the bat, I wanted to draw attention to the fact that there was definitely some intent here with making Sam more of an everyman than Solid Snake or Big Boss or whatever. Would you say that his role as such, as an everyman, a more working class guy, is it somewhat diminished considering he is also the son of the President of the United States?
So I think this game is so strange that it works for me. And yeah. I brought this up to you in a private chat where I also think this is Norman Reedus' best role that he's ever done.
Yes, I agree.
And so I tend to be more, what's the word? I'm more into everyman roles, like any sort of heroic character with maybe supernatural abilities, I start to tune out.
Yeah.
Well, when I try to describe this game to people, I'm like, well, you're kind of a UPS delivery guy on foot.
Yeah, yeah. For the most part on foot. It still sort of works for me, at least at first. I think he's sort of portrayed as estranged from his family. His skill set is pretty mundane compared to like Solid Snake or whatever. And the condition that makes him unique, which is called Dooms, I believe, seems relatively common in this universe. People seem to suffer from it from varying degrees. So yeah, I did feel a little bit more closer to ground than I would have otherwise. So the titular Death Stranding in this universe is an event that occurred, I believe, a couple decades prior, akin to a second Big Bang, a lot of that this season. Mm-hmm. This seems to have had many consequences for the world, but the principal one is that the relationship between the worlds of life and death has been altered. The afterlife in this universe is a purgatorial state called the Beach, which we visit that pretty often. So humanity's newfound accessibility to this plane of existence has allowed them to sort of use it for communications. They use it for 3D printing, stuff like that, transmitting designs and stuff, and myriad other purposes. So they call this the chiral network. They talk about it a lot. And it seems to me that there is some symbolic intent here with respect to the internet.
Yep.
There's a lot of thematic kind of like, has it made us more connected? Has it divided us further? So as you say, you know, the central gameplay loop here is carrying packages of various sizes and quantities from point A to point B. How do you feel about this concept, you know, at its core? And do you think it held up over the course of the game's runtime?
Okay, so this is a little complicated where I think the moving around in general is so arduous and so difficult.
Yeah.
Where carrying these packages is very engaging. But the actual gameplay loop, I mean, is not engaging at all.
Right.
Almost every objective in the game is bring this package to this thing. or go to this thing and get the package.
Yeah.
That's almost every objective in the game.
They throw a couple of curveballs at you, but in terms of, we'll get into it later, like the type of people you're delivering to, or maybe some of the more, they could have had a little more fun with it, maybe.
Well, yeah, where I think if we're talking about the details of the gameplay loop, I would have welcomed way more variation in the gameplay, other objectives, other things.
Yeah,
there's a lot of bring package to place and talk to person.
Yeah,
it's a lot of that.
Yeah, so a key component is your weight limit and how its distribution affects your balance, especially when you're crossing uneven terrain. This triggers control which way Sam is leaning, you know, like you do it with the shoulder buttons.
Yep.
When his packages begin to tilt, then you have to kind of recenter yourself. Crouching gives you better balance, but you will need to focus and slow down after jumping to remain upright. So there is a lot more consideration in that respect than other 3D action games.
Would you consider this game to some extent be a walking simulator? There's some aspects
of it. It gets derided as such pretty often, but the gameplay is my favorite part of this game.
Right, 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 right.
So, in addition to some of the world designs, but no, I mean, because it's walking simulate. Like, what does that mean? You know,
like, right? Where I feel like the main gameplay mechanics are you're walking over various surfaces, snow, mud, rocks, and you're trying to keep your footing.
Yeah,
and that's a lot of it.
And not let your packages be damaged.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, I've played a lot of more simple games where it's like, maybe, yeah, it's a walking simulator. You literally just push forward,
right,
and you
right,
walk.
Right.
This is like so much more, you know, engaging than that, I would say. Mm-hmm. So Sam can heal himself by eating small creatures called cryptobiotes, those little bugs that fly around in the air. And if he takes too much damage and dies, he will repatriate, they call it, in the sea. It's like respawning.
Yep.
In the seam, which is a transitional phase between life and afterlife. So if someone else dies in the game, they will go necro, which is they will die and they will come back as a ghost called a BT, I believe stands for beached things.
Yep.
They're sort of a stranded soul. They're stuck in the world of the living.
Yeah, I actually really appreciate games where respawning is in the lore of the game.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
You know how in BioShock you have the Vita chambers they explain how you can be revived, and
yeah,
in this game they explain you reloading a checkpoint, but you are repatriating.
Yeah,
you are coming back to life, and very few people can do that. And you're one.
And
of
sometimes
them.
If you fail your objective or whatever, he'll just wake up like it was a bad dream where he fucked it up. I like that.
Yep, I like it too.
So the BTs are a pretty significant presence in this. I think so. What happens very soon in the game is that when a BT will come into contact with a living body, it will be like a matter meeting antimatter, and it causes an explosion. And this will wipe out. There will be a huge crater if you are ever consumed by one of the bigger BTs. And this will affect the map, I believe, permanently. So did you find this to be a compelling consequence from a gameplay perspective?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think one of the most intriguing things about Death Stranding in the first couple of hours is how scary it is.
Yeah.
I didn't expect the first few hours to be legitimately kind of a horror game in some ways.
Yeah.
Where if like someone dies from a BT, anyone, like NPC, someone in the story, you explode and cause a crater in the earth.
Yeah.
I think what you said to me was the stakes are high in this game.
I would say so.
Yeah. And what I really like about this is it also puts a story emphasis on you should not kill anyone because it could happen to them.
Right.
And so I really like how it's all tied together. Like, and what I also really like is when you are in like a zone where there could be BTs, there could be ghosts, you can't see them unless you stand still and scan. There's a scan button. And it's so you're trying, there's like a little bit of a stealth sequence at times where you're either trying to avoid them.
You like hold your breath.
Right. And so, and you see some cinematics early on in the game of what happens to people when they get caught. And I'm like, this game is very scary.
It's horrifying.
Yes.
It's not quite on like the PT level, but it's very, very scary.
I would say to end this note, it is effective.
It's effective. Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, there are, in addition to that, there are a lot of different environmental hazards, some of which we talked about, including the uneven footing, bodies of water, snow, some poison gas here and there, and Timefall, which is rain, which accelerates the age of anything it touches. And so there's a lot of adversity when you're exploring the map. You can equip some exoskeletons and stuff like that that help you out with these. And there are also a couple of vehicles, including the bike. There's like some trucks later on, and you can also, there's a little, floating transport you can attach, and you can kind of surf on it sometimes if you want. You have unique purposes and applications. So I want to ask you, how generally did you enjoy traveling in this game? Did you struggle with any of these hazards in particular? And, was there any that stood out to you as a unique portrayal?
Sure. Now, is it okay if I talk a little bit now about the transient multiplayer?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
sure. So I thought one of the most effective parts of this game, I use the term transient multiplayer. I don't know if anyone else does.
I've heard asynchronous. That's okay. Another one.
Where you don't actually play co-op in this game, but when you affect the world, it affects the world of other players online. And yeah. When other players online affect the world, it affects your world.
Yeah.
And what I thought was so cool, I mean, as a side note, it's really, I feel like Kojima was expanding on Dark Souls, leaving messages behind, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
What's really awesome is how the transient multiplayer has a huge effect on the game.
Yeah.
Where, example, talking about the hazards.
Yeah.
There are so many times where I used a bridge that another player made.
Yeah.
I used a ladder that another player made.
Left behind like a climbing rope or whatever.
Yes.
And even the signs will affect your stamina and stuff like that.
Yeah. And do you know how often, when I'm riding on a vehicle, all the vehicles use battery power.
Yeah.
I so often used a player's battery station to recharge. I would give it the highest praise.
Yeah,
I think it's really cool.
It's really cool. Early in the story, Sam is paired with a piece of equipment called a BB, which is a bridge baby, which you've probably seen from trailers and commercials and stuff. It's a little baby in a pod, which helps you detect the BTs via a shoulder-mounted sensor called the Odradek, which you can also use to scan terrain and see, what kind of footing you're going to be dealing with. If you fall or otherwise take down damage, BB will get upset, and you can restore their health by taking a moment to rock their pod back and forth or taking them to a hot spring to recover. If your BB's well-being falls below a certain level, they will no longer be able to help you detect BTs until you reach a safe room and completely heal them. So I think we had the exact same experience. So I played this on PS4 originally. This time I played it on PC. You played it on PS5, right?
Yep.
So we talked about this on the Silent Hill episode this season. I really hate motion controls.
I do too.
And it's just like, I liked it so much better this time because all you had to do to soothe the BB was to move the control stick back and forth, whereas I believe you had to...
I had to rock the baby with the controller.
It's a little... It's kind of cool, but if you fuck up, you have to do it, and it's like... I feel a little embarrassed.
Yeah, and it's just...
It's a cool
mechanic, but I think it got to the point where I said, fuck this. I'm just going to wait till I get to a safe room and just heal automatically.
Yeah.
This sounds terrible, but the only times I rocked the baby was when I can't stand this thing crying anymore. I can't stand this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's not too many situations where it's urgent, but
yeah.
I tried to do it when I could. We talked a little bit about the online aspect, where you can not only what you mentioned, you can use other people's facilities, but you can also collaborate on sharing resources, like leaving things in lockers for other people. You can donate materials to a road that will gradually appear over the course. I mean, so I didn't, I just kind of ran through this time, but the first time I completed the highway.
Yeah.
It's so satisfying because it charges your vehicles when you're on it, and it like gets around all this terrible terrain, and it's really cool.
It's awesome. I think when I started seeing those player-made objects appear in the game and how much of an effect it had on my game, I said, this is one of the coolest things I've seen recently in game design.
Yeah, it's very, very innovative. You can use these things called the PCC, which is like a little 3D printer. You can use this to create some structures, including post boxes, battery powered, generators, watchtowers to observe the terrain, bridges to get over gaps, safe houses Timefall shelters, which protect you from the rain, and later on zip lines, which are unbelievably invaluable. So all this stuff has prompted Kojima to call it the first Strand type game, drawing comparisons to how the original Metal Gear was referred to as an action game by critics because the stealth genre had not really been established yet. How did you feel about the collaborative aspects of this game, other than what the things you've already said, as well as Kojima's assertion that it is a new genre altogether?
It's a great question. When I first started playing the game, I laughed at that notion. I almost said the same thing those critics did. Dude, this is a 3D action game.
Right.
It's really weird. Like, there's
it's a very odd action game,
but it is.
Yeah.
I think I'm a little bit more generous to that opinion of him saying it's a new genre because purely about the transient multiplayer.
Yeah.
I have just never seen it done to this extent.
Yeah.
But he also isn't the first person to do it.
Yeah, no. I mean, even I don't believe our guy Matthew Matosis actually reviewed this game, and he compared it to, I believe, like some very small game from the 90s where they already had, you know, on a much smaller scale, obviously, but they had aspects of transient multiplayer and collaborative stuff. And it's like, you know, is Dark Souls a Strand type game?
That's
like,
what I
don't
mean.
Know.
You they kind of like, did it first.
I don't know. It's because it's, I think it has a lot of different DNA from different things.
I mean, I would say, like, if I were to sort of, I guess, put a line in the sand, I guess, I do think this is a 3D action game.
Yeah,
I don't think
Strand type elements.
Yeah, or I mean, but he also made up that word.
Yeah.
Like, I would say it is a 3D action game. The multiplayer component is very unique, but that's probably as far as I would go. At least right now.
I agree. So despite the majority of the game focusing on pathfinding and delivery, there are also some more traditional combat segments against what are called mules and some terrorists. So mules are rogue sort of thieves that you encounter in certain zones. They have lost their scruples due to prolonged exposure to hostile surface conditions. They serve no higher purpose, but they generally work together in gangs to poach your gear and cargo. The terrorists, on the other hand, they are called homo demons in the game. They are kind of like the main antagonistic force, I would say. They take their place in the back half of the game, and unlike mules, they have no reservation about shooting to kill and are thus much more aggressive. So the game gradually affords you standard weapons, both non-lethal and lethal, as well as other means of dispatching these people, like bullet guns, the sticky guns, which I like a lot, and the various grenades. Most notable is the ability to use Sam's blood and bodily excretions to ward off BTs, since they are apparently averse to his repatriate body fluids.
Yep.
And stuff. How do you feel about the combat in Death Stranding? Does it feel too divorced from the main experience, or do you think it fits okay?
Okay, so the answer to that question is yes.
Mm-hmm.
But what I love how much of the story and the game gel together.
Yeah.
Where I laughed, but also nodded about how cool this was, where, okay, you use essentially your your piss and poop and blood to make...
Will's favorite part of the game,
yes.
Our friend Will.
Yes. My lovely bandmate Will. So
I want a game where you can pee and poop, and there you go.
You got it. So I think it's actually one of the coolest parts of the game, even though, yeah, it is silly and you would laugh at it. I love how much sense it makes in the universe, too, where you're a repatriate, your blood is effective against certain beings. And for that reason, coating your bullets in blood or throwing a blood grenade makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And like, you know, using your excretions as grenades makes a lot of sense.
And you never really, I mean, I don't play too many games where you can pee and poop, and it's a big part of life.
And it's really awesome. Like, it's just awesome how it's integrated into the game and the story.
And you can pee out in the world, and he'll be very private about, like, if you're around mules or even like enemies, he'll be like, I can't do it now.
Wow.
He's very private, but it's a very unique aspect of the game for sure. When it comes to the combat, for me, I think it helps a lot that all the weapon sounds they really pop. In fact, I mean, he's spent a good amount of time doing like action shooter games, you know, it makes sense that he would nail this aspect. But almost every audio visual aspect of this game is really well considered, and many choices they made are really refreshing. Some sound design highlights I'd like to point out for me are all the noises the BTs make. They're very scary.
Yes.
There's some baby ones. It's like very like altered baby cries and stuff. I really, one of my favorite, there's some things where when I'm playing a game, one of the sound effects gets stuck in my head, like when I'm not playing it, like I'm at work or whatever. And for me, this time is the warning sound that the Odra deck makes.
Me too.
Yep. I'm like, if I ever saw Kojima in real life, I'd start doing that with my hand.
Yes.
It's like, I love it's. It's so, it makes it, it makes it feel so, you know, it's a ghost detector, but yeah. It feels like a legitimate piece of equipment or machinery. It looks, it's
and
really
especially
cool.
In the beginning of the game when you don't have any means to dispatch them.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh fuck, I'm scared.
It's tense because you associate it appropriately with terror, you know? And I really like also the little audio cues whenever a specific character calls you, where I think the ones that immediately call to mind is when Mama calls you, it sounds like the Rockabye Baby kind of melody, and Heartman is the funeral march. I'm not sure about the other ones, but there are some that stood out. You had a couple you wanted to bring up?
Well, so I only want to backtrack just for a second.
Yeah.
The thing about mules and terrorists, I thought that was perhaps one of the weaker parts of the game,
mm-hmm.
where I found myself just kind of running through those sections. Like, I don't think...
Unless you had... Because I did like that there were a couple missions where you talked about variety. There are a couple where you need to go into their camp and get something.
Yeah.
And I thought those... Because you... Ideally, you're sneaking through.
Yeah.
And it's... I like that aspect of it. But, I think it suited that he would be averse to combat and kind of sneaking through.
I
think it makes sense. But
I don't think they were the most engaging parts. Like, having to actually take out a weapon and shoot at other people.
No,
and not the most engaging.
Not the mule and terrorist parts, no. But yeah, definitely. So speaking of the characters, Death Stranding features a incredibly unique cast featuring the voices and likenesses of many of my personal favorite actors, plus some film directors and assorted creatives from all over media. All character designs were based on the original designs by MGS veteran Yoji Shinkawa. We'll discuss each character as they come up in the story, but did you feel that the motion capture generally worked pretty well?
Yes. I think they did a very good job of where I started forgetting that these are A-list and famous people and that they're just doing a good job.
Yeah.
I thought it was really great how Guillermo del Toro's motion or face is in the game.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool. I thought they did a good job.
It's interesting that it's just his likeness.
Yeah.
And there's other people doing like the motion captures, other people doing the voice. It's pretty cool. But he's a very unique looking guy, so I'm glad they got him in there. This is sort of gameplay related. How did you feel about the role of the more minor NPCs in the game, like people you meet on the map and stuff?
I mean, it's probably... is it unfair to say it's the weakest part of the game? It's
one of the weaker ones.
It's one of the
weakest
parts of the game. I think I said this to you off mic. There's too much of go talk to hologram person. They info dump you and give you thing to do.
Yeah.
There's just, you don't run into enough people in quote unquote real life.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like, wait a minute. Isn't Conan O'Brien in this too?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He gives you the otter hood.
Yep. Yep. So there's, I do think it's the weakest part of the game. I'll just put that out there.
Like, yeah. I have a rant whenever
time allows.
Yeah. I mean, do you have more to say about this? Or?
I just, it felt like to me that I know the world is supposed to feel lonely and dead, but there definitely was not emphasis put on the main like settlement and hub locations of them feeling lived in. Example, they say, oh, there's literally like in information that says this city has 56,000 people. Where are they?
Right.
Like, I don't understand.
All underground.
Yeah, I don't understand, but it's one of the weaker parts of the game.
Yeah, no. I think, like, also, you eventually, once you sort of start to clean up the world a little bit, you see other porters out there. You know, they're just kind of masked like the MSF guys in the MGS games. Like, you know, they're not descriptive. I think you could have done something with those. Like, you find this guy who's like his leg is broken or is in a weird situation or something. Like,
you mean helping other porters, but in game?
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't do any of that.
No. So I'd like to talk about the NPCs a little bit. They do give you tangible rewards the more you build your bond with them. I mentioned the otter hat for Conan O'Brien. It's helps you when you fall into water. It will allow you to control the direction you can swim.
Got it.
So it's a tangible reward. And it does make sense that nobody would want to leave their shelters.
Right.
Especially considering how horrifying the world is. That being said, I think there were a lot of missed opportunities for characterization with these characters. There's a handful of interesting things that can happen where if you stop bringing the Elder his medicine, he will die and become a BT.
Interesting.
And you see like the hologram is replaced by the BT ghost. And there is an interesting side quest involving pizza delivery that has, it's almost like a great payoff, but they blew it. So let me tell you, did you finish this
one? I only did some of it.
So basically what winds up happening is the guy is Peter Englert is the guy's name. It's actually Higgs the whole time. Because I believe they were both scientists that worked on the particle project or whatever. So the names are connected, but Higgs, the villain of this game, is the guy who's been ordering pizzas from you the entire time. And what happens is, you know, with the place where you deliver it to him, you eventually that opens up. I think it's the only bunker that opens up and you can explore it. And he's got not only like a bunch of like half eaten pizza boxes, but also like photos of you everywhere. Like his like you see his like operation and
wow,
stuff.
That's cool.
So it's like, but big but here, you find that out because at a certain point in the story, once Higgs has been defeated, you get an email from him saying, "I was the guy who was ordered." Like that should have just been, look, you should have
just leave it alone.
No, like when you deliver the last pizza, it opens up and you find it out for yourself instead right. of reading it in an email.
It's like, why did they have to be funny there? Right. Just don't do it.
No, yeah. It's terrible. All right. So in a similar vein, the lack of diversity in the not cities and shelters I found pretty disappointing.
Yes.
I think on some level this is intentional. All of these structures are clearly like prefabs.
Yep.
And Bridges is portrayed as somewhat of a homogenized, maybe a little bit invasive organization. Considering this, it also makes sense that people are apprehensive about joining a larger whole. I mean, it's like one of the most common, like why people like yokels in small towns are afraid of like the globalists, you
yeah,
know, like
yeah.
they don't want to join the larger whole if it means sacrificing their privacy or individuality. So maybe on some level, this was intentional. That being said, there are a handful of shelters that have a little bit more personality, even in the delivery chambers. The one that sticks out to me in particular is the Timefall Farm, which has cases of the beer that they make, the Timefall Porter, and some agricultural supplies. Why couldn't this be the case for more of them? You know, like the guy who does engineering and stuff, maybe have some devices or stuff and on the walls.
Well,
like
I said, the cities and safe locations are... They make sense in universe, but they're not interesting.
Right.
They're just points on the map.
Yeah. It sucks that there wasn't like a little bit more.
Make it feel lived in.
Yeah. That's a big thing. So in that vein also, how did you feel about the overall visual design of Death Stranding?
Sure. Okay. So I think they did. The game looks, I think, as good as they could have with how not only how big it is, with how much you can manipulate the environment.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think the open world looks bad. I don't think it's the best thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I just think they did the best they could with, dude, this whole thing can either be cratered or there can be bridges built on it.
Yeah.
That's the best you can do.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I appreciate, as I mentioned, I appreciate how tactile and believable a lot of the equipment looks. It feels very kind of something that you could imagine people making in 50 years or whatever, especially the Audra deck, as I mentioned. I like the BB capsule and the vehicles. I like anything that is, it's not sexy, you know what I
yeah,
mean, like
yeah.
It's just kind of, it looks a little bit clunky and cumbersome, and it's just like it makes it more lived in, I would
yep.
say. I think it's an interesting decision to make the United States look like Iceland.
Yeah.
Which, but I feel that the map feels very sculpted in a way that complements the ebb and flow of the terror and the relaxation. There are, you know, it's, I felt like it was paced well with, you know, oh, the mountains are a huge, huge obstacle.
Yep.
But there are moments where it flattens out and yep. you can kind of chill out for a second. The bleak or the scary sections feel appropriately grim. There's a lot of heavy, like, rain falling on you. It feels very oppressive. And then when it clears up, it does feel genuinely beautiful. A lot of, like, rainbows and stuff like that. And speaking of these moments of clarity and relaxation, sometimes Kojima will drop in a song he likes during these moments. What do you think about the score and the soundtrack of Death Stranding?
So a lot of the score is licensed music.
Yes.
He does this a lot, though. Like, MGS5, you can just, like, bump around to 80s pop tunes.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine. I think... They pull on that rope too much. Like, they go back to the well
so
too much.
Speak.
Like, yeah. It's just, it's a cool moment when you've gone through this hugely oppressive environment. The sun comes out, you're walking down a hill, and then a licensed song plays and they tell you who the artist is, and it's very relaxing.
Yeah.
They just do it too much. It happens so
well,
often.
I have some thoughts on this. So I like the score a lot. Like, the electronic stuff is very, really cool. When it comes to the licensed music, I agree with you. I think it could have been used a lot more judiciously, where I felt like a lot of songs were getting cut off after like 20, 30 seconds because, you know, I'm not slowing down when it happens. Like, you keep moving forward and, you know, 20, 30 seconds. Oh, I'm in BT territory. Like, should have planned that out a little bit better.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I do like the music a lot. A lot of the is from an artist called Low Roar. This fellow recently passed away.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
About a month or two ago. I think it was October specifically. I actually saw this band and I met this guy.
Really? When?
This was, I believe, 2017 or 2018, because I heard their music was in the first trailer for Death Stranding, and I thought it sounded really cool. I checked out more of their music. They're an Icelandic group, and they were playing at Brighton Music Hall. And I went out in the back, but they were opening for somebody. I went out the back. He was playing pool out there. We had a little conversation, took a photo together. Maybe we can post it on our socials or whatever.
Wow, that's really cool.
But no, he was talking about, you know, what it was like to collaborate with Kojima. And he was surprised at how much of their music he wanted to use.
It wasn't just one song.
It's a lot. And I felt like there were certain moments where I first listened to these albums some years ago, and then when I heard them in context in the game, I liked them more. Like, when you first arrive at I think it's Lake Knot City, it's a very, like, Radiohead kind of sounding. He's got kind of a Thom Yorke thing going on, but I like the music a lot. I just think they could have deployed it better.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
Yep.
And I don't know, he's a really nice guy. It's just a shame he died. Do you want to get into the story here? Or?
Yeah, sure. I just want, it's cool that you got to meet him. I don't think you ever told me that.
Really?
Yeah, that's cool.
No, he's a cool guy. But it wasn't that. I think he had pneumonia or something.
Okay.
He was like in his early 40s.
Okay.
But no, cool guy. Yeah. So I think that's all the preamble taken care of. You want to get into story and whoa, boy.
Wade through this craziness.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's do it.
It begins. I like the opening of this game a lot. Very cinematic with Sam outrunning the Timefall shower on his bike. Early detail I want to point out is that it shows it happening. It kills a flock of birds because it accelerates the age of whatever it touches. You never see birds again in the rest of the game, and it's weird that they still exist.
Yeah. I was actually going to bring up at some point, I don't believe there are any animals or other wildlife in the entire game.
I don't think so.
I don't think there's any. You know what? They probably did this
Maybe
to show.
Fish.
They probably did this to show you what it does. Show you what the rain does.
Yeah.
But it's kind of weird how it only happens once.
It only happens once. I don't know. Maybe they live in caves or something. So you're on a routine delivery, interrupted when Sam encounters this woman, Fragile, and is they're forced to hide in a cave from BTs that they experience. So she tries to convince him to work for her. He says no. He kind of just does his own thing, just takes the contracts, right? So he is delivering packages to Central Knot City. And on the way there, you run into a team that is trying to dispose of a corpse because someone apparently like killed themselves, and they need to get it up to an incinerator before it becomes a BT, right? So the route to the incinerator is also plagued with BTs, and the mission fails. It's a very intense scene where you kind of get stuck in the mud, and the guys you're with get killed by the BTs, and it's very violent and scary.
So our friend Will, my bandmate Will, him and I played this together.
Oh, really?
The first couple of hours.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, this game is scary.
Yeah.
That cinematic is terrifying.
It's, yeah, where, you see the giant one in the distance.
Oh, and, you know, and one of the NPCs is trying to like take his own life so he won't get killed by the BT.
Yeah.
Or is that, he like takes a knife out and tries to stab himself?
He tries to shoot himself and they take it away.
Yeah.
And he tries to, because, you know, what winds up happening is he gets consumed and there is a void out explosion. What happens is Sam, I believe, wakes up in Capital Knot City, which is like the main base of Bridges. And he inherits, they have a malfunctioning BB unit. So he's kind of assigned to that. When he wakes up, he meets up with his dying mother, Bridget, who is the president of the United States. And she tells them they're taking on a new expedition to reconnect the fragmented United States. And he's like, no, I don't want any part of this. And she dies soon after, right? So he has to carry her body up to the incinerator and evade more BTs with the BB's help. And after he returns, it is revealed to him by Bridget's right-hand man, who was a guy called Die Hardman, that his sister, who is Bridget's daughter, Amelie, is being held captive by terrorists on the West Coast. And this is what convinces him to undertake Bridget's mission, whereas before he was like, no, I don't want any part of this, but I'll do it for my sister, right? So did you feel compelled by this? Why or why not?
The intro to this game is like, there's so much happening.
Yeah.
Where you get this really scary cinematic of two dudes like being killed by ghosts and you have to repatriate, right? Because essentially they explode.
Yeah.
You wake up and then
giant crater.
Right. And then someone tells you need to go deliver morphine to the president because she's dying. The president is your mother.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck is happening? And then it's kind of comical. You have to deliver the president's dead body to an incinerator and she's just on your back.
Yeah.
This game is so odd.
Yeah. Like, it reminds me, there's actually the show It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Their last season finale was the exact same premise.
Wow.
It's like, so you have to carry her body and it's like hard too.
Yes.
And it's like, I think it works because it's like, imagine what this guy is feeling and thinking at the time. It's really like heavy. But when it comes to the expedition to go across America, I was a little thrown by the fact that you can tell something is off with Amelie from the start. It's an odd, because it's the woman who played, I believe, what's her name, Lindsay Wagner. She was like a television star in the 80s, and he apparently admired her a lot growing up, so she is motion capturing or providing her likeness. The character Amelie is much younger, so it's already like she's playing a much younger character. She's also wearing this like impossibly red dress and like red shoes, and so she stands out when it comes to all the other characters. Looks so grim,
and it's very strange. Where so she's been captured by terrorists on the West Coast, but she can just talk to you whenever.
Yeah,
it's weird
through the network or whatever. They're letting her talk, right? She just doesn't seem as authentic or forthcoming as the other characters, at least at first. Even like Die Hardman, who has a mask on, this big like black skull mask.
Yeah.
He seems more trustworthy. So I don't know. It was weird. I think if the character seemed more genuine and Sam had a clear sense of fondness for her, I probably would have been a little more effective. It's hard to tell, like, oh, I'll do it for my sister.
Well, you know? There's like, a lot happening. I feel like you have Sam, who's very disgruntled, very private, doesn't really want to interact with anyone.
Doesn't want to be touched. That's his big thing.
Right. Like Sam has a phobia of being touched.
Yeah.
And what's really cool is all the handprints on your body I really like the, what's the word? I don't know if it's a metaphor or I really like the imagery where he's covered in handprints, but he doesn't like to be touched.
Yeah.
But that's the amount of times he's died and come back to life.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is very interesting.
That's cool. There's a lot of handprint stuff too, with whenever there's a crater, there's a handprint. And when the crystals come out of the ground on their hands. A lot of prevailing imagery there. That resonated with me a lot because I fear connection as well.
Well, so. The thing about Death Stranding is Kojima always does this, though. Kojima always does a good job of eventually explaining everything to you, but at the start...
Whether or not the explanation is satisfying.
He does address it, but the start of this game, there's so much happening. Where, you know, you have Sam kind of an everyman. You have someone named Die Hardman. It's really weird. What, Guillermo del Toro's character, isn't he called Dead Man?
Yeah. I was going to ask you how you felt about, like, the naming conventions.
Well, I like... It's one of these things where at the beginning of the game, I roll my eyes. I'm like, what the fuck is happening? But, you know, as you get towards the end of the game, they explain it, so it's fine. And, I mean... even like the later explanation of Amelie's name is really stupid.
Well, okay, so... I don't know. There's a lot of weird stuff in the Metal Gear series when it comes to names. Despite how silly some of these are, I did get used to some of them after a while. Like, so when it comes to names like Sam Porter Bridges, you're kind of getting back to like the naming convention of like someone's last name being, you know, defining their profession, like yes. Miller or Baker or whatever like that. What makes it confusing is that some characters have like multiple names.
Yes.
Like, why is Amelie also named Samantha America Strand? Like, am I stupid? What's going on? On there.
I don't know.
I don't know. It's just a little I feel like if they spoon fed it to you or dripped it along a little bit more.
Or, you know, this I might be less talking overwhelming. Like, maybe I'm asking it to be too simple, but if they explain to you that these names are call signs, code names, it would maybe be a little bit more digestible.
Yeah.
Like, hey, my name's this, but I go by
Well, you
Dead
find
Man.
Out that Die Hardman is not his actual name.
Well, that's what I mean. We're like, yeah, duh, it's not his actual given name.
Well,
but
who knows?
But you don't learn that until 30 hours later.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So, yeah, it's odd. Let's get into his journey here.
Sure.
There's a little tiny Eastern map that you connect first, and Sam is confronted by one of the central villains of the narrative. We mentioned him, Higgs. Greg is giving a big thumbs down in the studio space here.
Troy Baker.
Terrorist, voiced by Troy Baker. How did you feel about this character's premise and Troy Baker's performance here?
So it's unfortunate because I think this character, he might be my least favorite character in the game, is Higgs. Troy Baker, you know, acclaimed guy, does a ton of roles, you know, has a credits list a mile long. It is not my favorite thing when Troy Baker plays a villain or like a supernatural character.
Yeah.
I feel like I can tell he's playing a character and playing it up.
Yeah.
And I don't like it. And I feel like with Higgs... He's like this supernatural anime guy. It's really weird.
Well, I like the way he looks a lot.
Yes.
He's very cool, like gold skull mask and all this kind of ancient Egyptian imagery and stuff like that. And he has his own BB and the thing on his shoulder. But yeah, he's way too OP. He's like he's summoning BTs out of the ground and telekinesis and all this stuff. And it's just one of those things where I'm really interested in the rules of Death Stranding. Whenever there's like a cool sci-fi world or something, I like the characters to have to think their way around the rules, you know? And if it's like within, you know, the first couple hours, you're already meeting several people who can break them like easily.
Exactly.
You know,
I think Troy Baker's powers are just, they're out of control in this game.
They're out of control. They make him like feel way too out there for so early. I think his performance is like a little too campy, and I'm sure that was the direction he was given.
Well, that's a good word for it. I think I missed where campy's the word.
And it's weird because I wouldn't describe every Metal Gear villain as like tasteful, but in terms of even comparing to, he played Ocelot in MGS5, and I thought he did a way better job playing that character, who is very complicated. He's neither good nor bad. So it's I don't know.
I think Troy Baker is just better in realistic roles.
Yeah, yeah. He wasn't my favorite Joker either when he did that.
No.
I don't know. I think he's got some strengths and weaknesses like anybody else. So when this happens, you need to face off with an enormous BT shaped like a giant octopus. So what did you think of these early higher level BT encounters?
So it's difficult. I feel like I'm torn in two directions.
Yeah.
Where I appreciated any variation on the gameplay in this game because mm-hmm. it is very monotonous. But having a boss battle with a BT, it feels out of place, but I also kind of welcome it.
Yeah.
Where it's just something else.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to find some way to introduce combat to you, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is a weird way to do it. I thought the arenas were pretty cool when this happened with all the buildings that were being swallowed up by the tar. The first one I mentioned to you in our chat is really easy.
Yep.
I am a little bit more intimidated later on when they introduce the big lion one. It's a lot more aggressive.
Yep.
And you have to kind of think around a little bit more. I don't know. They're okay.
They're okay. It's just, it's tough, man. I appreciated the variation, but it feels out of place.
Did you ever get caught in the wild, dragged?
Once.
Once? Yeah.
Once.
So when I first played it, it happened to me near that wind farm and in the woods.
Yep.
And there was some kind of dolphin.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
And I'm like, yo, what's going on?
Yeah. I mean, I thought I was such a cool guy.
Dolphin in the woods.
Yeah. I thought I was such a cool guy, driving my bike 100 miles an hour. And then I just ran into a BT and got just flattened.
Just wrecked. And the first time it happened to me, I lost all my cargo. I ran to the city hoping to get some reprieve. And you can't do anything at your destination unless you have all the cargo with you. So I just took a little break and then I went back and I went looking for all my stuff. There's enough little situations similar to MGS5 where a lot of the most memorable stuff happens in the world.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, I only game overed once in the whole game. So, yeah. I mean, I survived getting caught by the BT, but And my cargo survived too, but there's a lot happening in this game.
Yeah,
there's a lot going on.
It's very overwhelming. So after you defeat this first kind of boss, Sam and Fragile take a boat to the main central map, which you spend most of the time in the game in, and you begin to get a sense of her past with Higgs as well here. So she seems to be feared and disliked by many of the local preppers because they believe she intentionally destroyed one of the cities on Higgs' behalf. In reality, she was tricked into doing this and winds up sparing another city from a similar fate. You watch the flashback where she has to run. He takes all her clothes off and she has to run through the rain with very little clothes. He puts a mask on her head and she has to toss the bomb into the tar where it will be safely disposed of. So basically you find out that her entire body besides her face is old.
She's wrinkled and
That surprised me. I was I feel like she was one of the more successful characters of this game. Do you agree?
Yes. So I think with Fragile, you at least see some of her life trauma.
Yeah.
Of why is she combative with Higgs? Well, okay, people think she's a terrorist or that she was working with him, but why do they think that? You get the flashback sequence where he essentially tortured her into, you have to run through the rain if you want to save all these people. If you want to dispose of this bomb safely, I'm going to destroy your body.
Yeah.
Essentially. So I was like, wow, that's very maniacal.
Yeah. It's pretty, pretty evil. Makes you hate Higgs, pretty good off the bat, but, portrayed very well by Leia Seydoux. She's in a lot of stuff now. She played it very, I think the motion capture was a success for me in this way, where it allowed her to be subtle.
Yes.
Whereas it could have been, very broad or compare this to Meryl in MGS1. It's fucking night and day.
Yeah.
It's crazy how far we've come. But no, I felt like she was a very successful character. She lets you fast travel, but you can't take any gear with you when you do it. So I thought that was a cool way to kind of get around it, where you can't really abuse it as much as you could in other games.
Yeah. Well, her kind of quote unquote magic power, Doom's power, is she can essentially teleport around.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but she has that little umbrella, but it does wear her down. And what I didn't realize is that if you do it a lot in a short amount of time, she'll get angry with you about it.
Really?
So that's a nice little touch.
I mean, I only fast traveled a handful of times.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
me too. So over the course of the game, whenever you initially connect with BBB, you experience odd like flashbacks of this character portrayed by Mads Mikkelsen. Maybe my favorite actor ever, like a living actor, let's say. I think this guy is awesome. He's got such a weird and unique presence in this game. He's always speaking from behind glass, like you're getting the perspective of the BB, right? Around this point in the story, you are whisked away to his beach, which is a decaying, like kind of glitched out World War One battlefield.
Yes.
Did you find this to be a welcome change of pace?
Yes, and I would have welcomed more of it.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's crazy. I think it plays really well. The atmosphere is very unique and disorienting. There's a lot of like stranded sea creatures and stuff like that. And you actually, I like that you have to use the Odra deck to find Mads Mikkelsen versus using it for avoidance. You have to use it to track him down and defeat him in like a little boss battle to get returned to your own world.
This World War One section is essentially Death Stranding shooting section.
Yeah. Well, I like it more than the Mule and Terra stuff.
Yeah, that stuff is kind of throwaway. I feel like, well, this stuff was very effective.
Yeah, it's very disorienting because it's kind of the central mystery of what's going on with this guy. I think it's terrific. I think you put in a great performance, but there's more on that later. So your next major objective is helping the character Mama. This sequence was a bit of a mixed bag for me. I'd like to talk about its successes and failures, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. I'd like to go and then you can add to it. So I think the character Mama, I think the conceit of this character is very engaging at first. Essentially, so her child died in the womb in some kind of accident. She's like buried under rubble and stuff. And it has become like a benign BT, like a baby ghost, that she can't leave this area. That's why she's kind of holed up in this rubble. That's where her lab is, because she can't stray too far from her baby. And she later develops an attachment to Sam's handcuff thing that he uses for like, it's like kind of like an Apple Watch, I guess.
Yeah. Kind of like that, a Pip-Boy.
Yeah. Yeah. So you use it later. She develops something that can sever the umbilical cord that connects BTs to this plane. So you eventually have this weapon that you can use to get rid of BTs on the map. And the first thing you use it on is her own baby, and you have to press the button yourself. And I thought that was very effective.
Yeah, me
like,
too.
That's how you teach the player something, is through a story moment like that, you know? I thought all that was incredibly effective. However, they also introduced that she has a twin sister called Lachna. And this feels really unnecessary to me. It feels like as a sort of a complication on a character that was already fine.
Yeah.
I think it makes it just less effective, because it's like sometimes there's an unwritten rule where if you're having to make a character more interesting, if you have some on paper, you combine them. Sometimes that's a good idea. In this case, I think it would have been better if this was given to a different character. Like you have twins who are kind of connected in a weird way, and then you have Mama, who's connected to her baby. I think that would have worked way better for me.
Yes.
When you reach one of the cities, Lachna turns you away, and you have to walk all the way back to Mama's bunker to grab her and bring her to her sister. I was like, because I like it when it happens later in the game, but this was just like, oh my god, dude,
yeah.
I have to go back and do this all over again with somebody on my back now. So once you get there, Mama dies. And what happens is she somehow, like, it's like she joins her consciousness with her sister, and she has like two different colored eyes representing the different people. And I think you had you had like a really good thing going there, man. And you just kind of made it.
I think they blew this one.
I think it started out awesome.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't know. Do you feel this?
Yes. So I it started off very effective, where the character's nickname is Mama, right? Kind of interesting why she called that.
Yeah.
You know, she had a baby who died in the womb, And she you have this BT that essentially lives in her house that is nonviolent.
Yeah.
And she gives you a weapon to kill BTs, which is slicing an umbilical cord.
Yeah,
you
or like to, letting them pass on.
Sure.
Right?
And you have to do it to her.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, this is very effective.
Yeah.
Like, wow, this is very, very...
poignant.
Yeah, very. And so, but then when you get to the point where you have to deliver Mama to her twin sister, but Mama dies, why?
Yeah.
Like, not only did I think her dying was unnecessary, her then joining consciousness with Lockney, it's stupid.
Yeah.
Like, come on, it's not believable. It's too out there. And I tuned out. I don't like it.
It's too complicated, where I'm sure there's like some email explanation that says like, well, actually, this is why she died. Like, I don't care. It's really care. Like, it's, I don't know.
I was even okay with you having to deliver her because she would be incapable of getting there on her own.
Sure.
Like, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I just like, why couldn't they just both live and stay there?
It is a little weird that whenever you have to bring somebody somewhere, you have to literally carry them on their back.
It's like, kind of humorous.
It's funny, but it's yeah. like, couldn't you imagine them like just walking alongside you? I don't know.
I know.
I don't know. Anyway, you spend a little bit of time here without BB's help because it needs to be reset by Deadman because its attachment to Sam is becoming too strong. And essentially, I think the idea of the BB is that it's like a premature baby that is closer to unlife than it is to life, or it has some yep. kind of connection, which makes sense to me. So you don't have BB for a little while. Do you want to talk about the changes that you have to?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is intense. You want to talk
so
about
this part is really cool, where you get kind of used to the gameplay loop of if when you would get close to BTs, your little sensor robot is going to go off in
yeah.
collaboration with BB, and it's going to help you navigate around BTs.
Yeah.
But now you don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have to not only kind of just do your best, you have to look at footprints in the snow
yeah.
or in the snow on the ground when BTs are close to you.
And yeah, they'll plop. You yeah. gotta stay very still.
And do you know what was the thought? I had the most badass moment, I thought, when I was slicing umbilical cords without BB's help. I was like, let's go.
Yeah.
It feels awesome.
That's cool. Yeah. And another thing that happened in the sequence for me was when you are doing this, you can also, so it's very hard to see BTs. What I found was other player signs were pointing them out to me.
Yep, very cool.
And I got into a very stupid situation because for me, it was the select button. It's kind of like an Xbox controller I was playing on. That allows you to like a sign, and I wasn't close enough. So, you know, when you press that, he goes, hey, or like,
oh my goodness. Yes.
It's like a function in the game where you call out to other players and they fucking discovered me
because
I shouted.
That's funny.
I'm like, that's a cool thing that, I mean, it's, I don't know. It's, I don't know how, if I like them being the same button, but
well,
it was a cool moment.
I think what they're also, so they were trying to establish here is that Sam is really valuing this BB as his own kid.
Yeah.
And they're starting to establish that.
Yeah. It's very like because Deadman is like, don't get too attached. These kids don't live very long.
Yeah.
Et cetera, which is very like harsh. But I mean, it's an interesting wrinkle.
What Deadman is trying to tell you is that the BB that you've been carrying around, this is a tool. This is not a person.
Right.
But see, obviously, Sam starts to value this.
It's got its own personality.
Yeah, like, yeah, it'll, yeah. And well, now in the going back to Mads for a second.
Yeah.
Now, did they establish in that first section that he's looking for your BB?
Yes.
Yeah. So that wrinkle is all. Yeah. So that wrinkle is also thrown in there. Like this BB that you've been taking care of, this weird World War One guy is looking for it.
Yeah. You keep having dreams about him.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Very strange. So on that subject, after you link up with Deadman at a cabin in the mountains, because he's like, I've got your BB, he's ready to be picked up. You're both whisked away into a tornado, into another one of these sections, this time in World War Two.
Yep.
So this one is a little bit more of a mixed bag for me personally. It looks great. I think I feel like there's a little bit of a missed opportunity to do something unique with Deadman in this other world.
Yeah.
You pretty much all you have to do is link up with him to get BB back, and then you go after Mads again and have another fight with him, right? I don't know what it was, but I feel like in a more successful story, something interesting would have been had where Deadman got captured by Mads or something.
Yeah, nothing really happens.
Nothing happens
there. You just
kind
of go talk to Deadman and then he's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's fine. So after this, Deadman confides in his fears in you that this is unclear to me that he is some kind of artificial person where he's afraid that he has no soul or beach/afterlife. So the circumstances of this are unclear. So I did a lot of reading on the fan wiki for anything I was unclear about of this game. It suggests he was created via in vitro fertilization. Something went wrong in his development, and he received some of his some organ donations from donors to replace the ones that weren't developing correctly. And in the game, he is apparently lying about being a Frankenstein's monster, where he doesn't like. Every component of his body was from like donors or something. And I just like, I'm just like, so why doesn't he have a soul? Like none of this makes any sense to me. Like,
well, I think it's probably, I'm assuming you're correct that it's unclear. He's probably hinting at where maybe he is scared of becoming a BT or becoming this sort of purgatory afterlife, or doesn't know if he would have one because of how he was made.
Yeah,
but it's just unclear about the resolution.
It's unclear how he was made, and
right.
I think the it could have gone down smoother if you made the revelation like a part of the story instead of like another exposition.
Sure. Yeah.
Dump, you know what I mean? I think around this time you also get an interesting scene with Deadman in your shower, where he goes into your shower and you can't leave or anything. You have to go and check on him. You're like, what's he doing in there? Right. And he begins to kind of, he's like, he puts his finger up. He's like, they're listening. And he starts to sow kind of seeds of doubt in Die Hardman and the overall plan. Like there's something not right here.
Yep.
Right. So I thought that was an interesting wrinkle. I don't think it pays off very well, but it's kind of cool that you're finally starting to question, like, am I doing the right thing?
Exactly.
Here, right?
They throw this wrinkle in there. Like, so at this point in the story, there's a lot happening.
Yeah.
You know, you have this, Mads, and I think it's revealed at this point, it could be later, that Mads is Clifford Unger.
Yes.
So Clifford Unger is looking for your BB.
Yes.
And so...
Sam names the BB Lou at this point.
Yes.
Too.
So also, I want to make sure the audience who hasn't played this, every time you rest in a private room, you see like a first person vision from your BB's perspective of Mads.
Yeah. When you hook up to it, there's a little like 90s modem sound.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
You get this dream.
I guess what appears to be happening is that Mads Mikkelsen was the father of your BB. This
right.
is what they're trying to display to you.
Yeah.
That is, so Mads is the father of the BB that is in your possession. And Mads is trying to take it from you.
Yeah, and they're all kind of trying to, they're like, we're trying to figure out the history of this particular BB, but we can't seem to figure out. We don't have any record of Clifford Unger, etc.
Right, and so I think the wrench that also gets thrown at you is this whole quest you've been going on of connecting the world. Deadman says to you in the shower that just be careful of Die Hardman.
Yeah.
Like what?
We don't really know that much about the guy.
Yeah, exactly. So all of that, this is where I think the game actually gets much more interesting.
Yeah.
It's kind of right around here.
Yeah. Very cool. You are kind of dispatched to link up some preppers in the mountain area at this point. And, you meet another one of your team members called Heartman. And Greg and I were both very fond of this cutscene, which I personally found very consistently engaging. What do you think? What was the appeal of Heartman to you?
Yeah. So, well, also, this is one of the only environments that feels lived in.
Yeah.
Like, you go to essentially Heartman's lab, and it's like this, I'm not going to call it like a bouncy house, but it's kind of like this lab, but all the floor is padded. There's a lot of couches and comfortable furniture. And what Heartman says to you is that is it 20 minutes?
21 minutes.
Every 21 minutes, he goes into cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
Because he's looking for his dead family in purgatory on the beach.
Yeah.
And he only has 3 minutes in purgatory and then he's brought back to life.
Right.
And this was one of these perfect like marriages of really weird Kojima shit and very emotionally affecting stuff.
Yep.
Where there's actually a timer on the screen, like time until cardiac arrest.
Right.
And during the cinematic, he will die. and then he will come back 3 minutes later.
Yes.
It's very effective.
Yeah. So this guy, he was the source of his image was the director Nicholas Winding Refn, who directed most notably Drive.
Yep.
That was his big hit. I think this is a very successful character. With the 21 minutes thing, I was actually listening to Kojima has a podcast now, and he was interviewing this director, and it was chosen to be 21 minutes because there was some... Okay, so I read into this. There was some kind of quack scientist from Haverhill, Massachusetts, who believed that the weight of the soul was 21 grams. So it's like it became a, I think all of his experiments were very like subject to, like, you know, he measured like the weight of the body before and after death kind of thing.
Sure.
And it's his methods were very questionable, but interesting.
That's
wrinkle
where they got
nonetheless.
It from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's looking for his family because he's afraid he's going to wind up in a different afterlife. Because they died in, I believe, a void out. And you get this very, really beautiful scene where you see all the lights go out and you see the reflection of the explosion in his glasses.
Yeah.
And very, very cinematically portrayed where he shows up on the beach and everyone is in the void out is kind of walking into the ocean. And they're all colorless. And what happens is when he is resurrected in the real, this is a representation of the first time he died, right?
Yeah.
He was in surgery. He gets resurrected. This woman on the beach like points at him and you hear like the AED noise and she like points at his heart and then the color floods back into his body. I'm like, wow, what a beautiful way to do it.
Yeah.
It was really, really nice.
It's probably one of the best directed scenes in the game.
Yeah.
If not the.
Absolutely. I think all the overt, like, ridiculous heart-shaped imagery is forgivable because of this. Like, he lives in a big lake that is shaped like a heart.
Yeah.
And his heart is shaped like a heart because of whatever.
Yeah.
I don't mean to sound stupid. Like real hearts don't look like cartoon hearts. His heart looks like a cartoon heart.
Yeah. I mean, well, I like I said, I think this is really the perfect combination of really weird, stupid shit and very genuine emotional stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the storytelling is very economical here.
Yes.
Like there are a lot of cutscenes in this game where I'm like, all right, can we get the show on the road? Like, you know, and this was like, I was engaged the whole time.
I was
time.
Very, it also could do with the fact that you're in a real environment for once.
Yeah. Well, so you walk into his office and there's that, there's a lot of nice little touches here where he has like sculptures of BTs and it scares the shit out of Sam the first time he walks in.
Yeah.
And then the second time he gives a little pat cause he knows.
Yep.
And then, he has the record spinning in his office. And when you're leaving, this must've been like a Norman Reedus, like improv thing where he's like, what if I did this? And he does a little like DJ scratch on the guy's record.
I believe Chopin's Funeral March is playing when you walk in.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
I really like, I wish they hadn't even addressed it at all. I really like, that was like the first thing I noticed was that the floor was cushioned.
Yes.
Because it's like, if he loses track of time and dies when he's standing or whatever, he'll have a cushion to fall on, you know?
Very cool.
Very, very thoughtful.
Very
good. Thoughtful environment. So with the help of the surviving scientists in this area, Hartman begins to piece together the series of happenings that led to the Death Stranding. And it seems that, I mean, this is a known thing in nature where every time there was an extinction event is, you know, like the dinosaurs or whatever. It's like, you know,
dinosaur ice age meteor, all that stuff,
et cetera. Yeah. So every time this happens in the Death Stranding world, there is one organism that, their umbilical cord, I guess, connects them to the other side. And that's what incites this, right? They show you like a dinosaur that had one, et cetera.
Yep.
And in this case, they believe it is Amelie, which, and so it's believed that this is why Higgs kidnapped her to kind of usher this in to complete like the extinction of
yeah
of
so
life
for
on
some
Earth.
Reason, like Higgs is trying to complete this extinction, thinks Amelie's the key. And that's kind of where Hartman is leading you to.
Yeah. And it's the Higgs motivation for me. It works better than I thought it would because it's, you know, a classic villain. I want to destroy the world, twirling my mustache, etc. But there, I mean, like, think about how many weird like accelerationists there are in real life where it's like, well, we're just delaying the inevitable. We may as well fucking nuke the planet.
I guess. I think his motivation is not the most compelling part of this.
No, but I mean, it makes it versus people who want to try and make a civilization versus people like, we just need to end it, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of similar to your Dark Souls, maybe ending fork there. A neat gameplay moment here happens, actually. I thought this was great, where you have to let yourself get captured by BTs to cross this like belt of tar.
Right. You're essentially like trying to get to Southern California.
Yes.
And you have to cross this ocean of tar.
Yeah.
And this took me a couple of tries to understand what was happening.
Yeah.
Where you have to get captured by BTs. So you go to like the tar ocean world. And because buildings come up out of the tar and you have to run across the buildings to get there.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
I liked that it was because I love it when this happens, when you are being kind of trained to play the game a certain way and then you have to do the opposite of what your instinct is.
Yes.
To progress. Right. So I was very bothered by this scene because I have a big phobia of enormous undersea creatures.
And the giant whales
that come out of the ground. Ugh. It's pretty scary. I thought it was really stressful when you have to get across because it goes on a little bit longer than those other boss encounters.
You have to
encounters.
Go about 700 meters.
Yes.
Yeah, it's long.
Pretty long. So I have another like very head-scratchy moment here. When you wash up on the shore, Higgs tells you that Amelie is here in Edgenaught City and it is now a race between the two of you to reach her first. And I was like, wait, I thought he captured her already.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So, I mean, like you find out that everything is not as it is, but I wish it was like Sam asked the question, like, wait, that doesn't make any sense.
I wish it was brought up in universe. Like, I thought you had her already.
Right.
Yep.
Or talking to his team and asking that question. Mm-hmm. I really like how in this part the platforming and traversal translates to the ruined city.
Yeah,
I thought that was awesome. And very bizarre the gas bag BTs that show up.
Really
like,
weird.
Where's this coming from?
I have no idea. It's like these almost like flying jellyfish things.
Yeah,
it's really
it's like
weird.
The first Mass Effect with the gas bag. It's very strange. You have another big boss battle here. It's ultimately pretty easy, but I thought it was pretty intimidating. It evokes kind of the scale of like the fighting a Metal Gear, where it's like an enormous, like giant guy.
Is this the Higgs mech moment kind of? He becomes a giant person.
Yeah, well, he and Amelie are like in this big. Big BT that appears to be like it's like a kaiju kind of moment. Like, and you have to like throw like blood at it and shoot it.
You essentially have to put like thousands of rounds downrange onto this thing.
Yeah, and, if they give you grenade launchers and stuff. Yep. That was a fun moment.
Is this where you get the rocket launcher too?
I think so.
Yeah, so I mean, this was, I think it's one of these things. I think it's out of place. I think it's silly, but it is fun.
It's fun.
And something I want to mention, the transient multiplayer is very cool here, where players throw you a gear and ammo and weapons.
Yeah.
And it happens a lot. And it's very cool.
I was unclear about when this happened, how much of it was actual other people and how much was it like just the game like supplying you with more blood bombs.
It looks cool either way.
Yeah, it's I didn't have a problem with it. So what happens here after you defeat it, Higgs actually shoots Sam to death, which I thought was awesome. And what you wind up having to do when he repatriates, you have to go to Amelie's Beach to confront Higgs. So I actually initially really like the boss battle with Higgs here, where you have none of your equipment and you have to just use destroyed pieces of cargo to whack him. I thought that was awesome.
So I think... It's okay. I think my problem with it is it comes across as a little too silly.
In what way?
Where, okay, you're now in a stealth sequence where you have to essentially get around Troy Baker and hit him with a suitcase a bunch of times. It's a little silly.
Yeah, but it's like I like how not elegant it is. It's
sure.
Very like it makes you feel more of an everyman that this is like a super.
Do you know what I would have preferred if you only have to do it once? Where you were like, because you have to do it so many times, it feels too gamey.
Okay.
Where for me, I would have appreciated if, okay,
If he had a health bar.
Or I would have appreciated more of like, I'm in this purgatory. I have no equipment. All I can do is improvise. I got to get around him and use the strand and tie him up. I thought it would be like a one and done. Cool, we did it. Because you have to do it over and over, I'm like, I don't know.
No, yeah, I see where you're coming from, but I liked it that it was... It felt a little bit more grounded than a lot of the other boss battles. So I like that a lot. What I had a less enthusiastic response to was like the boxing match that comes afterwards.
They pulled it right out of MGS4.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I'm like, this is just not the place for it.
No, not at all. You essentially they've set up the visual of the scene essentially like it's Tekken or something.
Yeah.
You have you and Troy Baker on left and right sides of the screen. You're punching each other and there are life meters.
You have to dodge back and forth and everything. It just felt a little out of place. I did like, you're not going to know this, but there was a reference to the movie Commando where he says, I don't need that. He throws away his gun. He says, I don't need this. I can beat you. And that's a reference to the end of the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie Commando. So I like that a lot. But I didn't like the boss battle with the boxing very much. I felt like it was
silly.
It just didn't, like, in terms of Higgs's role in the story. Yes, he's a reprehensible character and everything like that. But the way that they handle it in MGS4, it's like a little bit tragic.
Yeah.
And it kind of calls back to that a little bit. I'm like, I don't feel any compassion for Higgs at all. His character is ridiculous, and I'm glad he's gonna die.
You know? This the part where he licks you like Brad Marchand?
Does that part, right? Does that happen?
Yeah, where you don't remember this?
No.
This is one of the funniest things I remember from the game. I remember pointing at it and laughing and going, that is awesome and really weird.
Oh, okay.
Where you're essentially kneeling there and then he goes and licks your face.
Oh my God.
It's really weird.
That's that's what's ringing a bell.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that camp that Troy Baker just can't sell. Like, well, if it was somebody else.
I actually thought it was one of the better ones, where it is so odd and so gross, where I said, okay.
Wait, what's going on?
Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah, I don't know. So after this, Fragile allows him to either die now or remain trapped on the beach forever. He seemingly chooses the latter. I want to ask you also another weird thing. What did you think of he's the only character who consistently talks about video games? What did you make of this?
It's stupid. I didn't like any of this. This is the part where he says, like, I'm the final boss or something like that.
Yeah, just one old-fashioned boss fight,
I'm done with that. It's not funny. Like, it's not cute. It's too silly.
It's just like, I don't know... If it was, because he's the only, they do here and there, like Dead Man, when there's a void out, he says, it's a game over, and they show the MGS font game over.
Yeah.
It's a game over. I thought that was cute. That was
fine. But it's not the moment to do this.
No, well, he keeps doing it, and it's like, I wasn't sure if it was like, are they trying to say something with this character? No. You don't think so?
Isn't this also like the Princess Beach moment too? The
Princess Beach, Mario and Prince.
This was bad. Like
it was silly. Very silly.
I thought this was one of the low points of the game for me.
Because it's like taken very seriously, very sincerely. It's a sincere moment with Sam and Amelie, and he's like, "I'm Mario, and you're Princess Beach."
Why did they say that?
It's
I don't like it.
It's pretty funny. I didn't like it, but it did make me laugh out loud.
Yes.
And I did find Princess Beach in real life, which we can post on social media maybe.
Okay.
So that's that. This is kind of where the game kind of starts to fall down a cliff for me.
Yeah.
There is a reprieve, which we'll talk about, but I'm going to be pretty negative about the next couple sections.
We're going to be in agreement here.
So Bridget and Amelie are revealed to be the same person.
Thumbs down.
And apparently she was the true mastermind behind everything that happened. She wants to use the completed chiral network to link everyone and induce the extinction event that will wipe out what's left of everyone on Earth. Die Hardman was innocent all along.
Great.
Oh my God. There are a couple of problems I have with this. Number one, why would you let Higgs run rampant and disrupt Sam's journey?
It doesn't make sense.
If you wanted this to happen, right? Like,
no.
If she was giving Higgs orders, why do this?
Like, exactly, where if she was secretly using you to connect the world just so she could pour BTs onto the world, why would you ever have Higgs get in your way?
Right.
Why?
I don't get it.
Nope.
So I don't think the voice acting was very successful here either. And you get a lot of it between Sam and Amelie as the game draws to a close. Kind of a chicken and egg situation here, but it's probably down to poor direction, I would say.
Yes.
Amelie's every line, beginning to end of the game, is delivered with the exact same intonation. If she was supposed to sound detached, I think Sam should have addressed this directly.
Yep.
Because, you know, she is kind of emerging as this, you know, being kind of character versus like a normal person.
Well, I think they, before you continue down this rant, I do want to make sure it's clear. They do, the supporting cast does hint to Sam that, have you ever actually touched Amelie in real life? Have you ever met her?
Yeah.
And the cast starts saying, oh fuck, maybe she's the one who started all this. So they do set you up a little.
Yeah.
It's not like it kind of hits you in the face out of nowhere. They give you a little setup.
I just feel like, I mean, when it comes to twists, like there was just a much better way to do this.
Yeah. Or like, I'm sure you're about to talk about it, but something, maybe I'm being too simple about this. Some of the plot of this game is, or you could just not destroy the world. Just don't do it.
I mean, that's what happens.
That's what I mean, though. Like, you could just not do it.
Anyway,
keep going.
I actually do enjoy the segment where you have to travel all the way across the map. You were like, oh my God.
Well,
I hated it,
but I was like a love hate where I'm like, I fucking hate that Kojima's making me do this, but let's fucking do this.
But for me, it felt like a victory lap because you don't have to take any packages. Like they even say, you're the cargo this time, Sam. Yeah. And you can just like, I mean, the world is like fucked up. Like that part in Wind Waker with the storm everywhere, it's kind of like that, and it shows you, I would say, successfully how far you've come, right?
Yes, of course.
And
you walk 9,000 meters.
Yes, it's very, very long, but it pays off. So you are drawn into one last engagement here with Mads, this time in Vietnam. It's something I really like about these sequences as a whole, where how the combat evolves over time.
Yep.
Whereas World War One is just guys running at each other, right?
Yep.
World War Two is you're using all the bombed out scenery to your advantage. And the Vietnam section is a lot more stealth oriented, where you're like hiding in bushes and taking guys out with the wire and stuff.
Yep.
And all his dudes are like skeleton men.
It's interesting.
Really cool. So I liked this last sequence a lot with him, and they kind of leave you on a cliffhanger where, you know, he's not going to get his BB back, right?
Yep. Well, there is something cool. I think it's in the Vietnam segment. Mads sings a lullaby to the BB, but the BB kind of smiles at him and dances, but looks back at Sam.
Oh, really?
Instead.
Interesting.
Where it's like they had this cool setup here where I thought the BB was going to recognize the song and go, oh, it's my dad.
Right.
But that doesn't really happen. And so it kind of stuck in my brain of like, well, what's going on here?
Yeah. It's cool. So, pretty nice way of transporting you back to the eastern section of the map, and you have to defeat this giant flying whale boss fight. You didn't like this?
I absolutely hated it.
I was really scared by it.
I absolutely hated it. This was actually my one game over, which really bothered me. So this thing happened where I think the game cheaped out on me, and so I got mad, where the whale like jumped out of the ground and too many explosions happened and I got a game over and it said the world has been destroyed around you. I'm like, what? So I said, so there's too much happening on screen? What happened here?
Wow.
I thought this was, they should not have done this. Let me go into the city. Why are they interrupting me with this?
I think it was good to have this fight here, but they maybe should have handled it a little bit better.
This thumbs down for me.
I was very, it tapped into my fears of giant whales very well.
Well, here's the thing though, but for these bosses, they're bullet sponges. It takes forever.
Yeah.
It's
well, especially
so
these
annoying.
Later ones are enormous, but I like that you had to had a flying thing with, you had to shoot a rocket launcher at. That was kind of cool.
I mean, visually it's cool. It takes too long. I'm out on it, but whatever, you can keep going.
All right. So, Sam has one last little reunion with his team here. Before being transported to Amelie's Beach one last time. We actually talked about this off mic a little bit, where it felt very kind of off for him to have this speech. He has a little speech with his team. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, you're talking about Sam's speech?
Because he is very kind of reserved and not super talkative the whole game.
Sam is very despondent the whole game, doesn't give you much, refuses to be emotional with you. Don't touch me. I don't want to help you. I'm doing this to help Amelie. Essentially, fuck off.
Yeah.
He even says, like, fuck America. Like, fuck the government. I'm out. Mm-hmm. But he gives this weird speech where I recall some of the lines. He says, like, you know, I was broken, and then I learned to, like, love people. Why are you saying this?
Like, it's something where you should really be feeling instead of saying it out loud.
It feels odd.
Yeah. He does talk a little bit more and more as the game goes on, but this is like the most he talks. And it's just like,
do you know what's funny? I think my brother Nick said this. It's one of these moments where, hey, if you didn't get the email, this is what happened over the course of the game.
Right.
This was his character development.
Yes. So this part here I would describe as absolutely wretched. So you have a confrontation with Amelie here on the beach. I'll start off with a positive and then I'll go into the negatives. So I appreciate that the answer here is giving her a hug. I think that's cool.
You have to address your phobia.
Yes, you have to address your phobia, but in terms of, it's also kind of an inversion of the snake shooting the boss moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Very similar to that. And it ties into the broader themes of connection, where he's choosing forgiveness at this point, you know?
So I do want to set this up for our audience again. You are tasked with going to Amelie's beach to confront her, because essentially she's going to extinct the world.
Right.
And you feel like you are the one who could tell her to stop.
Right.
So, and you're the only person in this group of supporting cast who could do it.
Yeah.
So Fragile sends you there. Mm-hmm. And that's this.
Yeah. So I like that aspect of it, where that's the answer versus she gives you a gun and says, you can either shoot me or not. Right.
Yeah. 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 She essentially says, like, you know, it's really odd, but like she says something to you like, you could trap me here, and so I'll never destroy the world, or we could just watch the world burn together.
Right.
And I almost thought this was going to be the end of the game.
Right.
But little, you know, your guy Kojima, you take option C, which is neither.
Right.
So embrace her.
I thought it was, for him, his character at least, very powerful and earned.
Yes.
But her character still just did not work for me at all in this moment.
They blew it.
There's also what seems like an eternity as you watch like the credits roll and she like explains
the internet
everything.
Hates this.
Okay,
and
good.
I agree, it's okay. It's one of these things where it's cool, but people don't know what to do.
Right.
Like, and people think the game is over.
Right.
But there's hours left.
Yeah.
So let me like set the scene here, unless you were going to.
No, God.
Where essentially the credits are rolling on the screen. You're in this purgatory beach and you have to essentially run around and you run around and do nothing. You essentially run around and play around, and then you sit down and Amelie text dumps on you and dumps it's like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I thought this would have been effective one time where the credits are rolling.
You get stuck. Like, it's like they kind of dangle that fear, like, oh, now Sam is trapped on the beach.
Right. They're trying to essentially show you that Sam is also trapped in purgatory, but he saved the world.
Yeah.
But that's not the goal of this. The goal is there's hours left of the game.
Yeah.
If you ask me, you didn't play Hitman Blood Money, right?
No.
They do a cool thing where the end of the game, you're laying on essentially in your coffin. And you're like, oh shit, did my guy die? But you slowly hear his heart start to beat. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm not dead. They should have done that with this. Well, they would give you a clue where something else is going to happen. Just keep playing along.
Or, yeah, something to do, something where you had to figure something out, or at least not make it take 20 minutes not have her do an exposition dump.
Or you know what I would have preferred? Maybe she's off in the distance and you're like, well, the credits are rolling. Maybe I have to go to her.
Right.
You got to give the player something to go on. A lot of people online stop playing.
Okay.
And you can't. It's bad direction.
It sucks because I tell this to everybody that there is a really huge down spike in this game, like towards the end, and then it just rockets right back up.
Yeah,
so, it's fucking crazy.
Yeah. So I would say this part is bad direction.
Yeah, I don't like this part at all.
Let's keep going.
Sam is rescued by his team here, which I thought was cool. Thanks to their the connections that he's made, so they are able to rescue him. And Die Hardman gives a State of the Union about the future of America. And I liked his confession scene here where he explains kind of his role in the plot. I think it's a great performance, but you don't fully appreciate. I feel he's not even being like completely honest, so you don't really appreciate why he's being so emotional until after the final scene.
Yeah.
So Sam has a poignant farewell with Fragile here, and you know, kind of mirroring the beginning of the game, but he seems to have to bring an unresponsive BB up to the incinerator.
What's his?
Yes. Lou.
Yeah, so essentially they're asking, hey, your baby Lou did die, you know, or, you know, he's not functioning anymore and you have to go incinerate him. They're recalling the intro.
The intro, you have to do it for your mother, right? So connecting with Lou one last time, he plugs into the port and you get an extended flashback that pieces together all the various dreams and sequences involving Cliff. And how did you feel in this moment? Do you want to talk about like how you?
Yeah.
Because I know how I feel, but
this was very effective, but I kind of want to save my thought for the very final shot of the game.
Okay.
But what I did think was very effective, the entire game, you're looking from, when you get these weird flashback sequences, you think you're looking through the eyes of your BB interacting with Mads Mikkelsen, or his name is Cliff Unger in the game.
Yeah.
You're getting the first person, you're looking through the eyes of the BB, but now it's reversed, where you actually get a third person cinematic of what has been going on in these jumbled flashbacks.
Yeah.
You kind of get the whole story. Why don't you explain?
I think for him, it's like he's finally piecing it together, and you essentially discover, so Mads is trying to escape this facility with the BB, and he gets shot by Die Hardman, who is his former comrade, but he Die Hardman was working on behalf of Bridget, who really wants this I think it's one of the, if not the first BB, one of the first, and like we need it to for our experiments, etc. Like and what happens is you realize Sam is in the cutscene, but he talks to Cliff and he says, is this me? Because he takes Mads takes the baby out of the pod, which is, you know, it's they can't use it anymore for their experiments. And he starts to realize, oh, my God, this guy is my dad. Like, he's been talking to me the entire time.
Right. This is a great plot point where you think the whole game Mads Mikkelsen, Clifford Unger, has been is the dad of the BB or something like that. But you realize that he's been trying to find you.
Yeah. Sam was like a failed BB.
Yeah. So Sam was the BB. It's so clever. And I can't believe I didn't figure it out sooner. You're not the whole game. You're not looking at visions. You're not seeing your BB's visions. They're your memories.
Yeah.
You are the BB.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's pretty fucking well executed. You know, what happens is that Bridget will adopts Sam.
You.
It's like your adopted son. And what winds up happening was I did want to address that the still mother is like the Cliff's wife. She's in the room the whole time, like she's just comatose or whatever. He winds up mercy killing her here, right?
Yep.
And what I didn't realize last time was that her name is Lisa.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh my God, is this another Kojima real life connection with PT and Lisa?
Maybe.
You know what I mean? Like the baby like getting stolen, the Metal Gear getting stolen, you know what I mean? I thought that was very interesting. So a wonderful ending here where Sam breaks the BB out of the pod and resuscitates her, finding out that it's Louise. It's your first indication, because it's kind of genderless until that point. Would you have something to say?
Sure. So I think what really tied it all together for me, you know, this final quest essentially is your BB Lou, they has passed away, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And you need to take Lou to the incinerator, but you start piecing together that you were a BB that was broken out of a BB containment. And they say there's like a 30% chance of life.
Right.
And you survived, And, you know, Cliff Unger had been looking for you the whole game. And so they did a cool thing. You remember I brought up in the Vietnam sequence where Cliff sings to Lou, but Lou doesn't care.
Right.
Lou just thinks it's cute.
Yeah.
That's because Cliff Unger is not Lou's dad.
Right.
Right. Which is really, really great. And you go this final moment, you go to the incinerator to essentially incinerate Lou. But then you put it all to Sam puts it all together that he was a survived BB. So wait a minute, maybe Lou can survive if I break him out of the containment.
Not only that, but it ties into the larger themes of the game where like let's take a chance even though we don't have 100%.
Dude, this final scene is so effective.
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
And he finally he takes it out and he touches it to his face and everything because he's kind of getting over that phobia.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, perfect. You are a repatriate because you were a BB. And now you are saving a BB's life to become your daughter.
Yeah.
Now, we never mentioned this. They've been hinting the whole game that Sam lost a child.
Right.
At one point.
Yeah, and his wife.
And his wife.
Yeah. So it's kind of explains why he's so reticent to form connections as well.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I think this is so much more effective than anything with Higgs or Amelie. It's really difficult to reconcile that they were authored by the same person.
Yes.
Because it's so tasteful and so impactful. Very affecting twist. So I'm going to get into my final thoughts here.
Yes, yes.
What do you feel that the biggest strengths and weaknesses of this entire experience were?
That is a loaded question.
Well, I'll start, all right? And then you can maybe get into it, right? So I think Death Stranding is full of incredibly unique ideas I've never seen before in any medium. The gameplay is well thought out and constantly evolving in a natural way. You're perpetually adapting and trying new strategies to confront different obstacles so you can reach your destinations. I think its biggest failures for me are the classic Kojima problems, where we've discussed that the plot is messy, maybe a mess. I don't know how far you'd go, but the rules of the universe are weak and unclear. The cutscenes are too long and the characters are kind of a mixed bag for me.
Yeah.
So just really quick, with respect to the rules of the universe, it's very hard to take the laws of Death Stranding's universe seriously when most of the main characters you meet are exceptions to them in one way or another.
Yep.
With respect to the cutscene length, for example, there is a cutscene where you find out Fragile is really tired from transporting a bunch of people and she can't help Sam by using the beach. That's why you have to walk all the way back across the country. This is a 30-second conversation at most. This is stretched out into 5 minutes. It didn't need to be 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's just 30 seconds back into gameplay. You know what I mean? No need for that. Characters, I would say the biggest problem I have is that, take your traditional narrative character arc. Has a beginning, a middle, and an end, right? A character you meet is in a situation, something happens to them that affects them, and at the end, they act in a way, usually they make a choice of some kind that illustrates the way they've changed. Sam would be a perfect example of a successful character arc to me, right? Occasionally, you will have a character who doesn't change at all, despite changing circumstances, and they're either rewarded or punished for this. These are all positive examples in narrative fiction. The characters in Death Stranding, by contrast, for the most part, either have a beginning and an end, or sometimes just a beginning.
Yeah.
Instead of wasting time on the frivolous details and the side quest involving the chiral artist, which I would say is one of the worst parts of the game for me.
Yes.
I don't know why there was so much screen time devoted to that random NPC. Especially, so you have to bring this woman back to her husband. And, you know, they both think that each other is dead and you have to carry her to his shelter. And it's very long and drawn out. It's not a very good voice performance. And to make matters worse, you get the email afterwards that it didn't work out. Broke up. It's like, it's such a slap in the face for putting your time into it. You know, it's like, that sucked. I think instead of wasting time on that, you should have had a complete arc for all the major characters on your team to impress how important Sam's journey was. For example, Hartman, he either finally finds his family or lets go, maybe trusting that they're going to reconnect on the other side. Maybe Deadman is killed somehow and discovers that he has a beach or soul after all.
Right.
So do you want to share your final thoughts?
Yeah, so this is a lot to, this game is a lot to swallow.
Yeah.
So the positives for me, this is a game of like huge highs and lows, yeah. I think. The biggest positives, the transient multiplayer is the best use of it I've ever seen,
yeah.
by a lot. It's very cool. I have never seen a game where just walking somewhere is so hard,
yeah.
Where the gameplay is very much like, can you cross this mud and water and rocks while carrying a box? Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of the gameplay, and I have never seen that.
Mm-hmm.
I also think... the
especially for a AAA.
Yes, and the final story beat is so effective and so like, oh my God, it recontextualizes the entire game.
Yep.
It's amazing. And the beginning of the game is very effective. The BTs are scary. If yep. someone dies, you know, they're going to... If anyone dies in the universe, they are going to become a nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, the world is scary.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, the BTs are scary. So, but like, the things that really turn me off are like, on the show, we call it like anime bullshit.
Yeah.
With like Amelie and Troy Baker, Higgs, whatever. Like, Higgs has so many powers. His motivation doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, you know what it does? When someone is that powerful, it's like, why aren't they using it all the time?
Exactly.
Why can't he just throw like a piece of debris and like impale Sam? You know what I mean?
You could kill everyone right now.
You could do anything.
You're right. And I think Amelie and Higgs are the worst characters.
Yeah.
I also dislike this whole two people becoming one person. They do it twice.
Twice. Yes.
It's not good.
Yeah.
Also, the quest structure is very monotonous. Like, yeah. I can't give it a pass because there isn't... I would have welcomed way more variation in what you actually do.
Yeah.
But the thing about Death Stranding is it is so unique and so bizarre where I have no idea if I would recommend this. It's so strange.
It definitely depends on the person and how patient they can be in this these situations.
Do you think this game is one of the ultimate tests of patience?
Not much more than Metal Gear Solid 4 or something where it's like cutscene city.
Well, I think with this, you also have to stomach that the gameplay is carrying boxes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're into that, you're into that. And if you're not, then
yeah.
I don't think you'll have a good time.
No, I mean, those are really my final thoughts.
Yeah. What would you grade it?
B minus.
Okay. I was going to give it a B.
Okay. I think B minus because it's so strange to say some of the characterization and let's put it all together. Characters, voice acting, narrative, direction. Some of it is the best I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And some of it, I can't believe they were written by the same person because right. it's so bad.
Yeah. It's crazy.
And
so
I think I have to say B minus because the gameplay is also a huge plus and minus.
Yeah.
Very unique, very boring.
Yeah.
Like, it's so hard.
Yeah. It's weird. So, last question, Death Stranding 2 was just announced at the Game Awards 2022.
Oh God.
Do you have any, hopes or expectations for this? Did you watch the trailer?
I watched the trailer, but yeah. What's funny is I played Death Stranding after I saw the trailer.
Oh, interesting.
So I have no idea what to expect from this. I mean, it's going to be something about Sam now has a daughter to take care of, but they're trying to bring the world back together, right?
There's some positive and some negative based on that trailer where it appears to me that Fragile is taking the stage kind of now, which I would welcome very much. Do a completely different character. I hope that that's what they commit to. It looks like Sam maybe got caught in the rain or something because he looks old now, like Deadly Premonition 2.
Interesting.
And Fragile, comparatively, she looks like very young. Like they show her like exposed arms and everything. She's not old. So I don't know what happened there. Maybe that's a flashback. But there's some really cool imagery. There's a lot of like the red road people like walking through the desert. I don't know what that's about. But Troy Baker is back somehow, and I don't want it.
I don't want it either.
He's like, he seems to be kind of like a cyborg of some kind.
Oh no.
And I just, you know, I know what to expect now because nobody knew what the fuck Death Stranding was going to be when he first announced it.
Yeah.
The fact that it was like a cargo thing didn't come through until a couple years later. So now I have a clearer picture. I hope it's more... I don't think we need to do that again. I hope it's more like survival based. I think that would be a cool kind of direction for it.
Yeah.
I just know what Kojima is capable of now. I know there's going to be a lot of really cool ideas I've never seen before. Probably some stuff that disagrees with me strongly. And as far as the plot, it's kind of anyone's guess whether he'll be able to pull it off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's it for me.
Yeah, I mean, are you wrapped on Death Stranding?
Done.
Nice. So I think that was one of the more difficult games to, I think, to summarize.
Yeah.
I thank everybody for listening to this. It is a very interesting game, for better or worse. And we will catch you guys next time on Goddamn GameCube. Thank you.